You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another episode of the M Squared TechCast right here from the PodcastDetroit.com studios in Royal Oak.
We had a request to have the roof removed today, Jess, because it's such a nice day. Can we do that?
Yeah,
roll
the
roof
back? Is it retractable?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Did we pay the extra?
Here in the sun,
did we pay the extra half billion for
Brewskis?
That? I don't think we did.
It would be great.
Okay.
All right.
Sort of like Ford Field. The roof is there for good.
Yeah. Anyway, in studio, we have, and I've known Jim a long time, but I'm old and my memory is shot. So Jim Hebler, who's America's Director for Cybersecurity Solution Strategies at Pulse Secure. See, I can get that out.
There
right?
You go.
Okay. Why don't you introduce your boss?
Yeah, my name's Jim Hebler, and on the line with us is Pulse Secure CEO Sudhakar Ramakrishna. And Sudhakar is a leader from a technical perspective when it comes to mobility, secure access, Internet of Things, and everything that this great summit that we're all pulling together is all about. So thanks for having us today.
Ooh, like get a shameless plug in. Hit that bell.
All
so
right.
He's making reference to IoT Tech Connect, which is on April 29th at the Michigan Science Center. And we're hoping to have 400 or 500 folks there. I got Dan Keelan in studio with us, too, who's talking to a bunch of folks. He's working with us. And Dave just told me they're going to talk about tonight on IT and the D's. So, hallelujah.
Okay.
And so let's talk a little bit about what you guys at Pulse Secure do. I looked at your website, kind of brought me up to speed. You use military-grade encryption, is that right?
Yeah, we do encryption, authentication. It's what you call secure access, and it's a solution that the market has come back to if you really break it down. We're privileged to have 24,000 customers.
Wow.
Across a myriad of industries and verticals. Very big in the government space, big in the military, 13 of 15 free world government standardized with Pulse Secure. And from an IoT perspective, you can look at us. We work with a lot of the leading original equipment manufacturers, both in the Americas and in Europe. And if you think in terms of why Pulse Secure is very relevant, from a mobility perspective and applications perspective, what we are really good at is we do everything from encrypt and authenticate, but we also monitor. We also ensure compliance. We also can do measurables and share with Smart Fabric up and down the network of fabric what we see. We also containerize and secure and authenticate applications. So it's a very versatile solution in what we call hybrid IT. And if you think in terms, before we get Sudhakar in on this interview, we're adding about 2 billion end users annually to the global internet. And the average device density is between 4 and 7 devices. And if you think in terms of what Gartner is saying about IoT, there are 30 billion devices, half of which will have no security metrics built in whatsoever.
Scary,
coming on by the end of 2020. Well, it's scary unless you're working with a solution like Pulse Secure, because we enable you to use and be very productive. And with that, I would like to bring in Sudhakar. And Sudhakar, maybe you can talk about productivity and why Pulse Secure enables that type of incursion of people and devices without it being scary.
Absolutely, Jim. And hello, everyone, and thank you for having us here. Jim mentioned secure access. This was back in 2015 that we defined our mission of secure access. And we defined it as secure access solutions for people, devices, things, which is where IoT comes in, and services, which is where applications comes in. So we focus on access, and the way I describe access is you need to access things, whether it be your computer, your application, your cloud, or your phone to be productive. And so we are focused exclusively on secure access because using that, we believe we can improve the productivity of everyone simply. And when I say simply, with the best possible user experience. And what makes this really relevant to your point earlier about this is a scary world, et cetera, is with mobility, there is a lot more freedom, but with freedom comes responsibility, as you know. And then with cloud, there's different ways that customers can deploy stuff. And then with more and more devices getting connected, whether it be our thermostat or our refrigerator or in the industry, all our machines
on
the shop floor.
Everything on the factory floor, right.
Yeah,
factory floor, et cetera. So we believe that we have a responsibility as Pulse Secure to connect all of those devices to help people become productive, but do so in a very secure fashion by best-in-class compliance and visibility solutions. So we have been on this mission, and we have had the good fortune of having more than 24,000 customers, as Jim mentioned, with a very high what's known as net promoter score of better than 50, which is similar to most consumer brands, very high-power consumer brands out in the market.
So in the mobile world, which is where everything is going, and when we go 5G in this country, although in China they're already there, but I mean in this country towards the end of the year we'll be pretty saturated with 5G, although some markets like Chicago and I think Verizon, a couple of them different. How do you deal with that market? Because in that market, I'm always aghast when I go into a Starbucks and I see all these people working in there using the public Wi-Fi and I'm going, really? You know, so how do you deal with that?
That's a great point you make. In a previous life, I was part of the 4G revolution. So I actually built various solutions that took customers from 3G to 4G, where bandwidth was a significant premium because video consumption was skyrocketing. And so having high bandwidth was the premium that drove the 4G revolution. Connectivity will be the trend that'll drive the 5G revolution. With various 5G deployments happening, what it allows us to do is to have more devices, more people connected to the internet through wireless and mobile means more effectively. But what it does not completely solve is the security challenges associated with it. And the way we approach security is to make sure that it's always there, but not necessarily noticeable, meaning that you don't want to impose too much of a burden on the user or the device to become secure. And so we look at it as a very complementary trend. In fact, 5G actually accelerates our progress. You spoke earlier about automotive.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Detroit is the hub of the automotive industry, and we are working with significant OEMs in the automotive industry to essentially embed our technology into, be it connected cars, driverless trucks, shop floors, et cetera, to provide better secure access for them.
Now, you talk about Pulse Secure as having a military level security. As a practical matter, what does that mean? Do you have people there that have experience with military branches, or what does that mean?
Yeah, so basically, let's start talking about the U.S. Every one of the federal agencies, federal government cabinets, uses our technology, which means that we have had to pass stringent qualification compliance tests to be deployable, so to speak, in those areas. For obvious reasons, I can't go into specific solutions, but having been through that journey and having served not only the U.S. government cabinets, but as Jim mentioned, the free world, what we are able to do is take that technology and apply it to the broader enterprise use cases. So again, this goes back to demystifying fairly complex things and simplifying it for broader consumption.
And I'll add to that, one of our technology leaders, he's a global architect, a VP level, spent 25 years with the Air Force and then segued into the Pentagon. And you could argue that he goes back because we were creating instant networks on the battlefields in the Mideast War. Ooh. And this gentleman, who's one of our key technology leaders and works closely with Sudhakar and our R&D teams, he's now about 45 years into this solution. So that's the level of technical expertise Pulse is privileged to have on its team.
Ah, so how does that... go ahead.
And he also is based in the Great Lakes, which is an added bonus.
There you go.
Ah. So one of the tracks that we're having at IoT Tech Connect is on autonomous connected vehicles. And, of course, the cybersecurity track that we're trying to get you guys plugged into about anti-car hacking and how to keep the bad guys out of your IoT devices. But turning back to the auto world, everything is connected with the modern car. I mean, and everything's being connected to the mobile device that you're going to use to control the modern car. So that's got to be quite a challenge, isn't it, to keep the bad guys out of that?
Except what we have been doing over, I would say, 15 years now has been maturing that technology in the enterprise context. What we have done over the last 4 years is used mobile security, so to speak, and integrated that seamlessly into our solution. So in many ways, whether you are in a connected car or sitting in your office, you cannot get the same level of security, except that with mobile, what we've done is as a car moves from cell site to cell site, you mm-hmm. mentioned 5G, right. For instance, mm-hmm. there's technology involved in making sure that it gets seamlessly transferred where the connection doesn't get interrupted and security doesn't get compromised. That is innovation that our teams have built and have actually deployed. So that comes in very, very handy in the environments that you're talking about.
Good. We have about 2 minutes left, Jim. What do you want to cover in the last 2 minutes?
What I think it would be great to cover is that Pulse Secure, if you think in terms of where we've come from, we've spun out on our own from Juniper Networks in October of 2014.
Didn't realize that.
And I think what this type of a program that we're going to collaborate upon, Sudhakar comes into market, these are the type of opportunities we're trying to spread the word because we're like a best-kept secret, if you think about it, right? We've rolled out Zero Trust, software-defined perimeter. It's been a buzzword since about 2010, but we're one of the first solution organizations that has delivered it intact. We rolled that out at RSA about 1 month ago. And if you think in terms of what that means when you talk about bad guys trying to attack vectors, we make those attack vectors invisible. You can't attack what you can't see. Mm-hmm. And back to how Sudhakar led off, and I'd like Sudhakar to close off as well, because we would love to get him on more shows like this. But one of the things that he always talks about, it's not about fear and loathing. It's about productivity, because technology is amazing. These devices are amazing. And Pulse Secure really does. It's one of the first organizations. I've been at HP, Secure 24, these different places we were talking about to get ready, uh-huh. where productivity and positivity is kind of our message. So, Doctor, maybe you could close out on that note.
And how to reach you guys,
Absolutely.
Too. We need that, too. Oh,
we can do that. Go ahead, Sudhakar.
Absolutely. So we have a very basic philosophy, which is security should be about access, meaning get more things connected, more things enabled, more things productive. Do it simply, do it securely. And it should not be about control, which is how security has traditionally been viewed.
Okay, and then do folks want to reach out, find out more, give that website address, Jim.
Yes, it's www.pulsesecure.net, and you can reach us there. We also have offices in San Jose and all over the world. The phone numbers here locally in Detroit is 313-974-7411, and we look forward to continuing this message, and we really appreciate you having us on today. This is a great time for Sudhakar and I.
My pleasure. Prior to Dan introducing me, I had not heard of your company before, so this is a learning experience. So.
Well, there you go, and we will be talking more, and we'll make Sudhakar available to talk with you guys more, too. He's a very fascinating professional in our business.
All right.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, good to talk to you. We'll be right back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And welcome back to the Barely Organized Chaos. Barely of the M-Squared
organized.
TechCast.
Yes, we just, like, 1 second, we were done before we went live. Yes. So. Anyway, we have with us
a longtime friend of the show.
Yes. We don't use the O word. Yeah, get a lot of pushback on that. Yeah. So, Tim Bruchet, a longtime friend who's got had many titles, but now she's at Invest Detroit Ventures. And you're the portfolio manager.
Right?
All right, I got to write this down. Okay,
so
good.
At Invest Detroit Ventures, I have the privilege of working with about 100 companies that we've invested in over the past 10 years.
Wow.
I'm doing some really amazing things.
Lots of boards you sit on, huh?
Yeah, some of our team does. Yeah. I don't have to sit on boards? Not at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Bite your tongue.
It could be next, you know, stock options, all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So before we jump into this interview, should we talk a little about the Internet of Things Tech Connect conference
and what we're going to be doing?
Yep, here we go.
Yep. Well, you know, I got to push this thing. We're only 3 weeks away.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Timber is graciously agreed for the second year in a row to be the moderator of the one of the entrepreneur panels. Mm-hmm. And hers is how to pitch an angel investor. We've got a track that includes also Terry Bean and Tom Lawrence on how to do social media. Mm-hmm. It also includes, it's kind of controversial, but it's legitimate, how to get involved in the business of cannabis and hemp, because it's like the major entrepreneur thing in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And however, the panel I'm hosting
has
nothing to do with that. Yeah. We're actually going to talk about how to pitch investors, how to, you know, really go, what are they looking for? How do you get your information correct and ready for them? What kind of data do they need?
And it's a powerful lineup.
It's a very powerful lineup of people. And there are a lot of different ways to do it, not just angel investing. I mean, we do it through venture capital. Angels do it. There are individuals who do it. So there are a lot of options for people out there. And we just want to make sure they know all their options.
Also have Dave Weaver from Great Lakes Angels. Monica Wheat. Mm-hmm. She's not very busy very much. Doesn't do much around town much.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. She's the managing director.
Director for Backstage Capital.
Different title.
Great partner.
And then Lauren Hoffman from Woodward Angels and Rock Ventures.
Yep. So, partners. We work really collaboratively in Southeast Michigan and actually the state. Within the ecosystem to support each other. And if we can't help an entrepreneur, they don't quite fit in our range, we make sure that we get them to the person who can.
Yeah.
So that's super important.
We just had Lauren on the show last week, and she was talking about how the Grand Angels out of Grand Rapids now has affiliates in Kalamazoo and Detroit. Mm-hmm. And how they syndicate everything together, work together.
Yeah, it's very important.
But there's like 15, 16 angel groups in the state. I think you probably collaborate with most of them, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. We're a little different stage-wise, but we do collaborate with all those folks. And like I said, if it's something we don't fund, we get them to the people who can.
So that's an afternoon track. We're even selling a half-day ticket that includes the afternoon. Only $50. You get lunch. You get to meet Timber right there. That's the value, ooh. $50 to meet Timber.
Well spent money.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, guys. So today,
yes,
I'm going to transition now.
Good transition.
So today I have with me Kim Gámez. She is the founder and CEO of her company's called Mi Padrino, and I'm going to let her get into that a little bit. So it is an online event planning platform to help parents and families organize, plan, and fund events celebrated in the Hispanic tradition. Oh. They help organize and share the details of your events with your friends and family around the globe instantly. And let everybody be part of the celebration. So welcome, Kim. So glad you're here.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So we met actually, I want to say 2015 or 2016 at the Accelerate Michigan Innovation Competition.
Yeah, it was back in 2016 when I showed up with an idea in my head. Yeah. Yep.
So fairly new. So the Hispanic tradition, explain the tradition, how you came up with the name, what it means, and what had traditionally been done in your space.
Yeah, so the Padrino tradition is, I believe, what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so in the Hispanic community, when somebody's having an event, whether that be a quinceañera when a girl turns 15 or a wedding or any type of traditional event, they typically reach out to padrinos, which is the Spanish term for godfather, for sponsor. And it typically is friends and family that help pay for different items of that event. So in a wedding, a Hispanic family will have their aunts and uncles, cousins, relatives pay for different parts of the wedding, like the band, the venue, the dress, the bar, the cake, you know. They have padrinos for it. And I love this part of the tradition because everyone in the community is helping put on the event for the person of honor and not in kind of like the all-American setting where the person of honor is going into debt for the rest of their lives, putting on the event for everyone else. So I love this part of the tradition, but I hate it.
Yeah, my son just got married in September, and even being the father of the groom is, you just feel like you're shoveling money out the door.
So. Right. And so when you go to these events, everyone – has almost a piece of ownership because everyone's helped put on this event for the person of honor that day. And I loved the whole tradition. But I hated the process because it was all done via pen and paper. So you had to figure out who was going to pay for what, via calls or visits and then trying to exchange cash and checks. And if you can imagine Hispanic families living hundreds, if not thousands of miles apart, just what a huge mess this whole thing was. So I remember looking at my husband after being asked to be padrinos for my niece's quinceañera. And I was like, I wish she had this like online somewhere where I could just like put in my credit card and it could just, help fund her event or she could buy whatever she wanted. And he goes, well, wouldn't that be great? And so that's kind of where the idea happened. And a couple weeks later, I attended the first Accelerate Michigan competition and I stood in the back of the room and thought, if one day I actually do this, I want to pitch on that stage. So, yeah.
And did you pitch on that stage?
Yeah, I did. So kind of a little backstory. So in January, so that event was in November, I believe, in January. I decided that we were going to move forward with Mi Padrino. So we invested everything that we had and started Mi Padrino. We launched in June. We had a 600 user goal for 2017. We actually had over 50,000 people use.
Wow.
I know. It went from this little crazy idea to like, holy crap, people are actually going to use it. And that year, I went and pitched at Accelerate, where I got picked as part of the 30 companies that got to pitch there.
Out of hundreds of applications.
Hundreds, yeah. And so I was there pitching against like rocket scientists and all these like, crazy, and I'm this party planning app basically. And yeah, I won $100,000 at Accelerate Michigan. I thought, oh my gosh, like what is going on?
No, that's exactly it. The market, your market's huge.
Yeah, so there's over, just the quinceañera industry alone in the U.S. is a multi-billion dollar industry. There's over 500,000 quinces celebrated, and the average quinceañera costs $25,000.
Translate for me. What is that?
Quinceañera is the 15th birthday celebration.
Oh, like a bar mitzvah kind of thing.
Like a bar mitzvah, but okay. In the Hispanic community, it's for when a girl turns 15. Mm-hmm. It's her coming of age celebration, and the average price tag is $25,000.
Oh my God.
Yes, and there's over 500,000 of these celebrated in the U.S. And again, they're all done. I know, I'm looking at your eyes. I know. They're all planned offline. And so when we went out to solve for the Padrino tradition, like almost this like crowdfunding piece of the mm-hmm. problem.
Yeah, yeah.
We realized that our users were saying there's no online inspiration or inspiration online. There's nowhere to shop for traditional goods that we need to buy for our parties. There's also where can we find service vendors like the photographers that are going to take pictures, the cake that we need.
The caterers,
of that. There was nowhere there online where you could find vendors, products, services, you name it. So Mi Padrino now has morphed into this full marketplace for planning Hispanic celebrations. So,
Matt, why don't you ask your question now?
Oh,
sorry.
Yes, I always have a question of startup companies. And this grew out of the last recession when jobs were hard to come by. But I'm just wondering if you're hiring now, and if so, for what skill sets as you build this business?
So we currently are not hiring at this moment because last summer we raised our first official round of funding for the company, mm-hmm. and with that we were able to hire 13 people here in Michigan.
Wow.
Yeah. Yay. So we went from a team of 3 to a team of 13.
That's awesome.
And so right now we're putting those funds to work, and we'll be hiring again probably this summer.
For what skills?
So a couple different. We'll probably be hiring some more software engineers as well as marketing folks. And mm-hmm. we're always looking for someone who, is either a Latina themselves or kind of an expert in the Hispanic space. So
yeah, that would help, right?
Yeah.
Never do a business you don't know anything about. Doomed for failure.
So how many users do you have on the platform today?
So we just celebrated our 300,000 users have used Meet Padrino in planning their traditional event.
And how are you building success with that customer base of 300,000 people?
So it depends on what you mean by success. For us, having 300 people use a platform that we've built out of Ann Arbor, Michigan is success number one. We also have this when I was just talking about our last round of funding, we had Exo Group. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Exo Group. They own the knot.com, which is the leading wedding website. They invested in Meet Padrino in our round last year.
Strategic partner then.
Yep. So a strategic partner. And so just kind of having, I mean, obviously I still look up to them. They have, 2 million brides or something crazy every year that use the knot.com. Ooh. And now they're like a big sister to us, and we can reach out to them at any time. So that in itself, and then we're talking to people like Univision, which is the number one, media outlet for the Hispanic community.
Yeah, Latino network. Right?
Yeah. And so we're talking to all these people, and I would have never done that. I wouldn't even be able to get an intro a year ago. And now I'm flying across the country meeting with these people. So it's pretty amazing to see that what we're building here in Michigan is being taught, we have all these users nationwide. Plus, when we go into Mexico, I mean, that's sick.
Well, or Latin America in general, right?
Yes.
Yeah, my God.
Yeah.
So you're not really international yet. You're still focused on Norte Americano, right?
We're still trying to figure out the U.S., even though we do have users in almost every area of the states.
Really?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing. So who would have thunk it? I mean, you always bring in the companies that I would go that I never think about,
which is awesome. So, and it really sounds like listening to your customers over the years is how you've expanded Meet Padrino to what it is today, with all of the vendors and the planning. And did I see that you created actually a planning guide that was sold out?
Yeah. So we actually we do all these planning guides online, as far as these digital lists that they could read online or they can download and print them off at home. And I looked at my team and I said, we should print these in like a nice cute book and we can give them out, or we can maybe sell them. I don't know. And so we printed this really cute. Well, it's nice. It's a hardcover binder. We printed 1,000 and they're completely sold out within a matter of like days. Mm. And we actually had talks with Target last week, and they're interested in putting us in Target nationwide, which is pretty cool. So,
well, there you go. I'm thinking you should join that board, get those stock options.
So how would you go into Target? Would you become part of their kiosk then, part of the gift registry or something? Or?
No. So these are actually printed planning guides. We'd be a product on their shelf. Yeah. Okay. And so we're at the very beginning stages of that. But it's still great to know that. I mean, obviously I haven't.
You know, how many Target stores are there? There's got to be thousands, right?
Yeah, there's thousands.
Yeah.
So.
Isn't that fun?
Target, really.
Yeah. But I love that. She started this company to make it easier and online and more convenient, and now people still want a little bit of the old school with a planning book. So,
but yeah, the whole planning book drives them back online. Yeah.
Well, you can also keep the planning book as like a souvenir.
Yeah, it's like
a
keepsake.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, you can't really electronic. I mean, I can, but
yeah.
So, I just think it's
interesting that these events had sort of this. It's sort of like they invented crowdfunding before there was crowdfunding.
It's
the way these events worked, it sounds like. So, yeah. But people are really generous. People are really nice, as you will learn if you try to crowdfund something that's worthwhile.
You had a beer before you started, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So if people are interested, Kim, how can they find out more?
Okay, so they can visit us online, which is meetpadrino.com, and I'll spell it MIPADRINO.com. And if you want to reach me directly, it's kim@meetpadrino.com.
I misspelled it on the sheet. Sorry. So.
Just a little transposition
there.
No worries. Yeah, that's all right.
And if we can help with anything, you can find us at investdetroitventures.com.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much, Timber.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us. Interesting stuff as always, Timber.
Yeah.
Thanks again. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
And we're hopefully going to get RJ King, who is the editor of DBiz, who's going to be calling in. He's going to be moderating one of our panels at IoT Tech Connect. And it includes, well, it's focused on electric vehicles. We have an expert from Plante Moran who will be doing the overview, and then we have a couple of examples. We have Robert Bollinger, who we've had on the show, who's with his own money developing an electric pickup truck. And then we have Bedestrian, which is one of those last-mile electronic delivery vehicles. Oh, I think we have RJ. RJ, are you there?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I was just doing the intro on your panel that we're going to have on April 29th at IoT Tech Connect. And we were just talking about electric vehicles, and boy, that's all the rage now. It seems like it was hybrid a couple of years ago, and we're going right from gasoline and diesel-powered internal combustion right into electricity, and hybrid's like not that big a deal anymore, right?
Yeah, they're really pushing the hybrids on the lot now with incentives, so I'm not sure what the reception will be for pure electric vehicles.
Well, what's interesting to me, RJ, I just went to a presentation by a Lawrence Tech professor where I work on Friday about his work in electric vehicles. And he worked 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. I don't know if you even remember this. I had a hard time remembering it. Everybody was talking about fuel cell vehicles, hydrogen fuel cell vehicles.
That was big.
That there was going to be millions of hydrogen fuel cell vehicles on the road by now, and there are virtually none. And what happened there was the technology took a turn and batteries got really cheap really fast. And I think that's sort of what is driving this effort toward hybridization and electrification. The question, I think, is still one of range, right? At least it is for me.
Yeah, I think that's all correct. And the electric vehicle panel that we will be presenting will cover that and also look at the viability of the market. We don't have too many charging stations across this country. And then when you factor in range anxiety, it really leaves a lot of questions, I think, in a consumer's mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that just came up, and I was in another briefing earlier last week, actually, where they were talking about that. It's wonderful to build these vehicles, but if people aren't going to buy them, what good are they, right? You know, so I guess we can ask that question during the discussion. Is, you know, I mean, are we talking a couple years, 5 years, 10 years? It's really, I think, dependent on the battery technology. However, there was a story that came across over the transom last week that there's somebody developing a battery that'll deliver 600 miles range, but I think it's still pretty much in the preliminary stages.
Well, there's that, and then when you pull into a gas station today, you know, you're in and out in 5 minutes, say. And if you pull into a charging station, I mean, I was down in Florida recently, and my sister was explaining to me that there's so few charging stations that people are lining up at what is available, and people are like bringing books or their phones, and they're just waiting in line to get their vehicle charged. And it does not seem very efficient.
No.
In terms of what you get with the gasoline experience. So until they get more charging stations and quicker charging time, I think they're going to have some issues in terms of trying to get consumers to either buy or lease these vehicles.
Well, I know, and a lot of that depends on the technology too. I know I've got one of the Google Pixel phones, and that has a quick charger that will get you from 20% to, say, 60%, something relatively workable, in like 15 minutes. Now, getting it all the way to 100 is going to take, you know, substantially longer than that, but you can get, you know, what the equivalent of half a tank really fast. And hopefully, you know, electric vehicles will move in that same direction if they ever, you know, hope to have broad consumer adoption. And I always joke that for me, the range question boils down to 260 miles. That's how far away my in-laws are in the Traverse City area. So that's how far I need to go on one charge. Maybe
262.
Give me 300 to be on the safe side, right, or if it's cold out or something like that.
Oh, yeah, if it's cold, that changes everything.
Yeah, and so, you know, I'm just wondering, when do they get to an honest 300-mile range? That, to me, is when I'll buy one, or at least look at it. So,
well, there's going to be a premium on the price for a long time until they get in that old economic term, economies of scale, until they really start cranking these things out and reducing the cost. Yeah. They're going to be a rich person's toy, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, Tesla has certainly had a challenge to getting in that $30,000 one on the market. I haven't seen any yet. Yeah. I don't know how close they are.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about D-Business now. I'm sure everyone's heard about it, but go ahead. This is your chance to do what we call a shameless plug. Why don't you talk a little bit about D-Business and what you guys do?
Well, D-Business Magazine, we're year 13 now, and we're a regional business publication. We've got the magazine itself, and 6 years ago we launched D-Business Daily News, which is a daily e-newsletter that provides six stories related to business in Metro Detroit, along with our famous party pictures. And just today we launched a new biweekly newsletter called Tech and Mobility News.
Ah.
And we have some other things coming down the road later this year and next year that I can't really talk about. But
who would we tell? Come on, you know. So
just us kids.
Our overall company is Our Media, and we're based in Troy, and we have around 140 magazines around the country.
No kidding.
And probably a bit more websites. And then we do a lot of titles where we have a partner, say a chamber or a Michigan Wine and Grape Council or an organization like that, you know, a Michigan Beer Guide. And we do that in other states as well, say the California Beer Guide. And, you know, we have a couple of book titles. And I'll have a book coming out May 15th called Detroit, Engine of America. And it tells the story for the first time of how Detroit went from a fort on the riverfront in 1701, where today sits the 150 West Jefferson Building. And it brings the reader right up to 1900, birthplace of the automotive industry. Everybody knows what happened after 1900 to Detroit, but nobody knows how we got there, so it's a step-by-step explanation, and it's quite a rich history. And so we'll be launching that May 15th on our Momentum Books platform.
Our is into everything, aren't they?
Well, we're now the largest regional magazine publisher in the country, and we are still looking for other opportunities to enter other markets. What's been happening of late is, you know, a family or gentleman or a lady builds up 8 or 10 magazines in a given market, whether it's Phoenix or Denver, and, you know, they're getting to the age that they'd like to sell. So we've had an opportunity to acquire quite a few magazines over the last 4 or 5 years, and really drive some economies of scale when you look at printing prices, you know, prices at the printer. And then everybody goes on our national subscription list. So that takes sort of a action item off of our local offices. And then we do some other things to reduce cost across the board.
So besides Our Detroit, which I would imagine most of our listeners in the Detroit area have heard of and seen, what other cities do you have city magazines in?
Los Angeles, Sacramento, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Atlanta, Cincinnati, Palm Beach, Naples, New York, and Mobile, Alabama.
Okay. If you need people in Palm Beach, you just let me know. So I'm out of here.
Oh, and Grand Rapids as well. We acquired last September Grand Rapids Magazine, Grand Rapids Business Journal, and Blue Michigan, which is a magazine that goes to coastal homeowners as well as lakeside homeowners in Michigan.
Ah. Yeah, my first exposure to city magazines was on an internship when I was in college. I spent a semester in Philadelphia and read Philadelphia Magazine for the first time. And the key to that was it was the only place with decent restaurant listings that you could find anywhere that was a handy thing to have. Now that all that stuff's available online, sort of what's the editorial niche of those magazines now?
Well, I think those are still very well used in terms of the listings. People find them well organized. And it's not as well organized on your mobile device or your computer, unless, you know. And I think other magazines, you know, city magazines do the same thing. And people, you know, obviously we complement those listings with restaurant reviews. And people, you know, wine reviews, new beers, all those spirits. And I think people find that of great interest. So, yeah, you always find that people are keeping the issues around just because, hey, the next time they've got to go to Ann Arbor or Novi or Grosse Pointe, you know, what are the nice restaurants that are there?
I think that would be a restaurant reviewer, Matt, would be a good sort of retirement job for you. What do you think?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. There's one other thing. This might seem like it's out of left field, but I noticed several publications in Colorado, after they approved recreational marijuana, actually started having like marijuana writers and marijuana reviewers. Any interest in that regard?
We covered that sector of the economy here in Michigan. On our e-newsletter, we haven't, we've done one story in the magazine. Most of our stories focus on growth, either here nationally or internationally by our companies here. So the, I think the last story we did a couple of weeks ago was on a cannabis operator that had just secured $30 million in funding to complete their expansion. So it's getting to be sort of a grown-up market pretty quickly here to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some serious cabbage for the cabbage. One last question for me. What are you hoping that people get out of the electric vehicle panel that you're going to be moderating at IoT Tech Connect?
Thank you, Matt.
April 29th, Michigan Science Center.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Well, number one, a state of the industry where it stands today, who the players are, when we'll look at, you know, adoption rates. And at some point there will be a switch when they can fix, you know, we'll look out into the future and provide people with as much stability as we can in terms of when will this industry get to a massive adoption rate. Right now it's still, as we mentioned earlier, the challenge of getting your battery charged in a quick amount of time, finding a station, a charging station, and then, you know, getting to the point that, you know, maybe new homes are specifically outfitted with charging equipment that would make it easier. You just pull into your garage. You don't even have to plug it in. You just have a unit in the floor of your garage and it would charge it automatically.
Wireless.
I can see that in parking lots too.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay, RJ, give people the contact information for D-Business Magazine and for our publications overall, and then we're out. We have less than a minute left.
Oh, sure. Well, thank you. OurDetroit.com and DBusiness.com. We also have DetroitHome.com, Weddings.com, and the momentumbooks.com.
All right. Thanks very much. RJ King, editor of D-Business, who is moderating an electric vehicle panel at the IoT Tech Connect Conference April 29th at the Michigan Science Center. Thanks for being with us today. We'll be right back with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast. Right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launch pad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with today's final segment of the M-Squared TechCast.
Calling in from some far-flung location, I'm not sure where, is Tom Lawrence, CEO.
Hey, how you doing?
Yep, good. And you're the CEO of Lawrence Tech. Is it Technological or Technology Services?
I'll take either one.
Okay.
The bank will cash a check either way.
All right, well, that's good. And as a brief plug, get the bell ready.
Okay.
He's also on the social media panel at IoT Tech Connect on April 29th at the Michigan Science Center. There you go. Okay, good. Terry Bean, the Bean Man, is moderating that, and Tom's on that. A couple other folks that work with Terry are on that that I have not yet met, but it'll be a great panel. It'll be, you know, how to use social media to really effectively promote your business. And one of the things that Tom has claimed to fame is he's getting paid by YouTube to make postings. That's right, isn't it, Tom?
Oh, yeah. We use YouTube as part of our social media strategy. We share all the knowledge. We share projects that we do. And we don't hold anything back. You know, we lay out how we do things, you know. And some people say, are you sharing, you know, competitive information? I'm like, yeah, if I can tell you what I did and you can do it better than me, I'm not doing it right. That's always been my attitude. So, yeah, we post a lot on YouTube. And it's been a fun interaction. You know, we have about, roughly 500,000 people every 90 days, unique viewers that come to our YouTube channel and learn about different technologies that we're using, how we're deploying them, and how we're using them.
What is like the most popular topics that get the most views?
Firewalls have been really popular, and probably a runner up to that is going to be everything related to Wi-Fi. So the network engineering videos and the firewall rules and VPNs, really popular because people want to get a better understanding and understand better what products are out there and not hear from a salesman, hear from a tech actually deploying it in the field. And the same thing for the Wi-Fi. Every salesman tells you that their Wi-Fi solution for their product is the best one out there. And we talk about real world deployments and problems we ran into because we're not bound to any one vendor. We actually use a few different solutions for Wi-Fi. So we talk about the real world experience we have with deploying those solutions.
Okay. And then let's talk a little bit about IoT Tech Connect. Now, obviously, what your part of the panel is going to be, I assume, is you're going to explain to people how you effectively use YouTube. Why don't you give us some hints in advance on what you're going to talk about?
You know, if something we learned from watching TV is that, you remember Mike Rowe and his Dirty Jobs, is that people really want to know behind the scenes what a job is like to do. So when you start sharing with whatever it is, whether you're a metal worker, whether you're a technical person like myself, and you start sharing that behind the scenes, people get a little bit more connected to your product. You know, this is easy to do on YouTube because it's in video form, so we can visualize how we're doing things. And sometimes I just take the camera on site when we're doing a deployment. But you can see this on other companies that have really embraced this, where even on like social media, you're sharing a little behind the scenes, how we do this, how we do that. I mean, I'll admit, even as a kid, I was fascinated watching how Ford made cars or how GM made cars. Anytime the news crew would be there just showing the assembly line, because it's a mundane job maybe to someone who's there and there in the assembly line. But when they get that behind the scenes, you create a better connection to the product you make and then to the customers that are interested in purchasing those products from you.
All right. I see on your website here, Time, you've got over 57,000 subscribers to your YouTube channel. That's pretty impressive. Are most of them in the Detroit area, or do you have business all over the place, or where is your business located?
We are geographically located just south of Detroit, but as far as our audience goes, it's about 51% in the U.S. The rest of that audience is actually global, and we do a lot of our work with because it's of a consulting nature where we're remoting in the systems to set up and configure firewalls. That we do globally, everywhere from I was in Australia remotely in Australia last week. I had a great time setting up this company in England, and then we just did a VPN system between Sweden and their New York offices and built out all their virtual infrastructure that we're doing for that.
Wow.
Now, I noticed part of the business is also called PC Pickup. Is that a previous business you had or just a previous sort of brand name?
A previous brand name, because we started out doing retail a number of years ago. So I've always had the business services, but we had the retail store. We technically still have it. We just don't advertise it as much anymore. But we still have a actual storefront over in Southgate where we moved. We consolidate all of our offices are in Southgate now. But we do offer if there's people who walk in and want to bring computers in. We've just over the years seen a decline in it because computers have become almost disposable. If it doesn't work, you can just go grab another Chromebook and get them going. So we don't do as much retail business anymore.
Yeah, I know the last time mine died, I found online a Dell with a terabyte of storage and 8 gig of RAM for $199. So I'm like, okay,
exactly.
I'm not going to pay to have this fixed. You know,
yes.
I use backup, so I'll just go ahead and buy a new one.
So
exactly.
So Matt, ask your question, then I'll segue into my next one.
Sure. This is a question that I ask all of our guests here, and it grew out of the last recession when jobs were hard to come by. I'm just wondering if you folks are hiring right now, and if so, for what skill sets?
At this particular moment, we're not. But when we do hire, it's network engineers. That's always what we need more of. Cybersecurity, network engineering, Linux. That's something where they're so demanding. Those people are hard to find. I cherish and treat all the ones that work for me right now very, very well because they're a hard group to find right now.
What are some of the other skill sets that you have the most difficulty recruiting?
It's more of a getting that practical experience type person. And, you know, it's that I tried it when I can. I've hired a couple of the people came from internships from the local colleges. I like doing that so I can figure out whether or not they're trainable because then I can shape them into it. Because unfortunately, and this is just a challenge that the schools face, I know, of being relevant because tech moves very fast. You're like, oh, yeah, I configured this or I learned, you know, server 2008. And I'm like, yeah, cool. We're on to server 2019 now. So there's always that lag. I know schools are getting better at it, and it's just a challenge because it's not something schools have been readily to deal with because technology moves very, very fast. So most of my challenges have been finding people that have a good grasp on the most current technologies. And schools does an excellent job of teaching them some of the fundamentals because, you know, we're still using TCP/IP to connect everything. But making sure they have that drive to stay interested and engaged with this, taking things apart. Kind of the people who I like the best have that hacker mentality of, I want to know how this works. I want to get into the details, not just follow along a flowchart of yes or no's and figure out what the problem is with it.
So what is your background? The website says you worked in corporate America for a while. Do you have, did you get a formal university education? Did you just get some certifications or how did your career begin?
Actually, none of the above. I got out of high school and started working in tech. I started at some small businesses, and eventually that led me to working for a fast-growing supply company. We were in the transportation logistics. We were tier one for Ford, handling all the deliveries for a big section of it. We worked with Penske and Ford to manage all the freight, all the Ford delivery plants related to truck and that. So that was about 3 years, and I was head of IT for that company. We did very, very well. The company had some issues, and it got absorbed and split up like many of these big transportation companies do into other companies.
And going forward, then, what kind of technology do you see as something that maybe you're not doing yet that are really big in the future? What do you see coming down the line?
The big thing we're doing, and it's been kind of fun, we've engaged with a couple clients with this, some larger ones here in the area where it's open source cybersecurity consulting and open source network systems. We're seeing all these companies offer these closed source solutions, and then we find out problems with them where they're slow to patch. And then, you know, it gets confusion because you don't really own all the code. And this is, you know, you look at Microsoft and Azure, they're really embracing the open source world. So we're seeing more and more push to, we realize the value is in not owning the code and sticking a bunch of licensing on it, but understanding the code, having possession of it so you can modify it and really customize it to your needs and the visibility you get. So you don't have to worry about a backdoor being in it or not being able to audit the code. So open source is really where we're seeing it. And this includes in many of the IoT devices. I just published a video on a open source SD-WAN solution called Zero Tier. It's actually been around for a little while, but it solves a lot of connectivity problems in a completely open source way. And without any license fees, you're able to, you know, create entire software-defined networks very easily across a lot of locations without a lot of proprietary software. So it makes it easier to deploy, easier to control, and of course, easier for the CEOs and CTOs of these companies to audit the code and go, okay, I understand what's going in my network. It's not some secret sauce that nobody knows how it works.
Hmm. Okay. So you've been around the business a long time. What's been the biggest change you've seen? You started the company a little over 10 years ago, so you just had your 10th birthday, right?
No, actually we started in 2003.
Oh, so wow.
It's been
okay.
Almost maybe 16 years and legally 16 years in September, this year. So,
okay.
But, virtualization has been, one of my favorite magic things that I've seen. I just love the fact that I can spin up virtual servers in a few seconds and then migrate without shutting them down, migrate them from one server stack to another, moving them around. That has been, I understand all the technical details of how it works, but it still makes me smile every time I do this to stand up a new set of servers and without shutting the company down, start migrating servers across without, you know, your normal traditional shutdown reboots and or move physical hardware. So that's been some of the magic that I've really been impressed with over the last years.
Interesting. Let's turn back to your YouTube prowess in the sense of, do you feel because of your strong YouTube presence that's helped you generate additional business revenue?
Quite a bit. Matter of fact, one of my friends, I was breaking down internally, and I have videos on this, like exactly how our process is for a client acquisition from YouTube. And it's kind of weird because it breaks any traditional marketing concept. I'm getting paid to market, like, quite a bit from YouTube and from, affiliate linking and things like that. And on top of that, we have an inbound lead generation from there that has about a 60 or 70% close rate. So
Wow. When
people go through to contact us, I'm not sorting through just a multitude of emails. They bring us, okay, here's the challenge. And can you help us with this? Absolutely. And they determine, like, we'll do a video on some enterprise storage solutions. And we've worked with some large enterprise open source storage solution companies to demonstrate their products and show how we use them. And that's landed us a very big consulting gig with three data centers here in the U.S. we're helping plan out some of the back end storage on them. So they're really good leads that come in, and it's been an excellent growth for my company. We actually don't spend any money on marketing at all anymore. We last year has just been from YouTube.
Wow.
So do you have someone who's a hobbyist videographer on staff, or how do you actually shoot the videos?
Oh, that would be me. I have a background in photography and videography and editing. It is like a hobby of mine. So This is one of my hobbies meets my day job of spending my time deep in the weeds as a tech. So it just kind of fit together. And it's easier when you shoot it and edit yourself, so I don't have to like tell someone else or spend a lot of time instructing them. I know what needs to be cut out. I know what needs to be assembled and put together. So it's come together pretty well for me to do it all myself. It makes it challenging because there's obviously maybe a growth curve, but I'm still able to crank out three videos a week, depending on how busy I am.
Hmm. What kind of video editing software do you use?
Because I like a challenge, I've decided to do the entire top to bottom with open source. So I'm actually using an open source program called Caden Live, and I've also created tutorials on how my open source video workflow goes. So it's all free tools. It's all, I run Linux on the desktop full time. So I'm using Linux on the desktop, Linux for all the editing and the audio editing and everything else. And then I shoot with Canon camera equipment, and we have a studio built within my office itself.
All right. Come learn more about the secrets to social media marketing from Tom Lawrence, CEO of Southgate-based Lawrence Technology Services at IoT Tech Connect, April 29th at the Michigan Science Center. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you. It was great.
Okay. Want to thank Tom, all our guests today, RJ King, editor of D-Business, Tim Berchet, portfolio manager for Invest Detroit Ventures, and Kimberly Gamez, founder and CEO of Mi Padrino. And that's an event planning site for the Latinx community. And also, we started off the show with Jim Hebler, America's director of cybersecurity solution strategies at Pulse Secure. Nice show.
Interesting mix there, I think, don't you think?
Yeah, there was just enough cybersecurity to be interesting, but Jim didn't scare us as often as some of our other cybersecurity.
No, we saved them for later, like Richard. You know?
Okay. Well, we'll be back with you at 2 o'clock next Monday afternoon Eastern Time. Until then, listen to back editions of the M Squared TechCast at mitechnews.com, podcastdetroit.com, and anywhere you can find fine podcasts. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.